Now, mustn't call names.
Think it through. If you saw the killer, you're in danger from him. If you didn't, if you agreed to lie for some reason, you're in even more danger.
How sweet of you to worry about me. Poor little Lily. You think highly of safety, don't you? After what happened, I'm sure I can't blame you. Did you go into police work because you felt safer with a gun and a uniform between you and the bad guys?
Another good one.
But Ginger had always known how to jab below the belt.
The thing is, Ginger, I know you didn't see the killer because the killer wasn't there.
Now, that's quite a trick. He killed her without showing up?
Yes. You see, Therese wasn't killed by a lupus. She was killed through sorcery.
For a second, fear flickered in those expressive, too familiar eyes.
You've been watching too many trash movies.
I said I was assisting the FBI, remember? They've got the case now. Murder by magical means is a federal crime. The only one with an automatic death penalty.
For a moment, Ginger didn't say anything. Then she jerked one shoulder in a dismissive shrug and turned away.
I've really got to get back to work, Sugar. I do appreciate you filling me in on all these fascinating little details, but...
Lily took her by the shoulder, stopping her.
Listen to me. They don't need you anymore. We know Turner didn't do it, so you're a loose end. You think they won't hurt you as long as you keep your mouth shut, but that isn't how they'll see it. You could change your mind. As long as you're alive, you could decide to talk. And the person who killed Therese can reach out and stop your heart anytime he wants.
Wow. That's some imagination you've got.
Lily said nothing, letting Ginger's own imagination work. She looked away, fiddled with one earring, looked back.
So what happens if I tell you someone asked me to say what I did? Will I get in trouble?
I think I can see that you aren't charged with obstructing justice.
Well...
Ginger's gaze darted around again, as if she were seeking some reassurance. It landed on Rule, who'd stayed back near the door.
All right. It was Cullen. He asked me to say that.
Cullen Seaborn?
He and I had an on-again, off-again thing for a while. That's the way it is with Lupi. But when they're on... Oh my. We've been more off than on lately, and I was hoping to change that. I didn't know what he was going to do to that poor woman, but I guess I knew he wanted to make trouble for Rule. I didn't realize how much. Truly, I didn't.
She's lying.
Rule slammed his door shut.
Maybe.
Lily pulled her seatbelt across and fastened it.
When I looked for Seaborn the other day, I couldn't find him.
You did well. Didn't butt in.
It wasn't easy. Lily, I know Cullen. He's not part of this.
But it fit awfully neatly. They were looking for a sorcerer. He was the only one Lily knew about.
Your friends? Close friends?
I know it looks bad for him, but Ginger isn't the most reliable witness.
Considering that she's already lied once, no. But what does she gain by lying about him?
It could be her way of protecting herself, but I'd vote for spite.
Are she and Seaborn involved, then, like she said?
Involved might be too large a word for it. Cullen doesn't indulge in relationships, just sex.
Rule pulled out into traffic.
Which won't make you think highly of him, but there's a difference between promiscuity and ripping out a woman's throat.
Ginger lies easily, but she was genuinely frightened.
You're scary when you get going.
How long has she been coming to the club? Is she one of your groupies, or is it Lupi in general that she likes?
She likes having sex with Lupi. She doesn't actually like us.
He swept her with a quick glance, his expression unreadable, and returned his attention to the street.
I never had sex with Ginger.
I didn't ask.
You were thinking it loudly enough. She's afraid of us. I found that a turnoff.
She hangs around Lupi because she's scared of you?
She enjoys fear. It excites her.
Lily sorted that into what she knew of Ginger as she had been and as she was now.
Well, that fits. Hey, why are you stopping here?
He'd pulled into the parking lot of a beachfront restaurant.
For lunch.
He turned to look at her.
And for questions. This time I'm asking them.
I'm not hungry.
I am, but it can wait. You said you'd explain later. This is later.
Tonight will be later, too.
Seeing Ginger had been more than enough of a trip down memory lane. She didn't want to linger there.
Look, I was friends with Ginger's sister in grade school. Bad stuff happened. It was a long time ago, and I've got an investigation underway.
You're hurting. I want to help.
Lily looked out the window. Beyond the parking lot, a slice of ocean showed between buildings. It was deep blue today, sparkling back at a cloudless sky. 20 years ago, sky and sea had been gray. Gray and stormy. She unfastened her seatbelt.
I can't talk about it. I've never been able to talk about it.
Never?
He laid his hand on her shoulder. She felt the warmth immediately, the connection. She shook her head.
All right, it's up to you, but the mate bond can be good for more than sex, if you let it.
Lily looked out the window again, at gulls wheeling overhead and a sky as clear and blue as forever. At first, they all wanted her to talk about it. The cops, her mother, the therapist. She couldn't. Parts of it, yes, but never the whole story. Never the worst part. They stopped urging her to try.
Maybe I can do it now. I'm tired of silence.
She pulled off her shoes.
Let's walk on the beach.
It was surprisingly uncrowded near the water. Families mostly came on weekends, of course, at this time of year.
All we need is a sunset and we could be in an ad. We must look like the perfect California couple, walking barefoot and hand in hand on the beach. Lord knows you're photogenic enough.
Someone's usually smiling in those pictures.
I'm fresh out right now. We need to keep this short.
All right. You knew Ginger several years ago.
20. 20 years ago last month. Her sister was my best friend in grade school. I spent the night with her fairly often, played with her after school, so I saw a lot of Ginger.
Did you like her any better then?
No. But she was the older sister, so naturally she was contemptuous of us little kids. Back then, Ginger was the obedient child, believe it or not. Sarah was the one who got into mischief.
I have a hard time picturing you getting into much mischief.
Oh, I was pretty much a goody two-shoes. I did my homework, didn't cut in line, didn't talk in class. But Sarah loosened me up some. She could talk me into things. We played hooky one day.
Not a large rebellion.
You wouldn't think so. We didn't like our teacher, and somehow it made perfect sense to punish her by skipping school. We had it all worked out. How to slip away before class started, which bus to take. We hadn't planned on the weather, though. It was working itself up to storm, so hardly anyone was at the beach. At first we were bummed, but then we decided it was cool. We had it almost to ourselves.
What happened, Lily?
We were abducted.
For a moment, Rule's fingers tightened hard enough to hurt.
He was a friendly man. He reminded me of Santa Claus, only without the beard. Grandfatherly. He just started talking to us, teasing us about not being in school. At first, I wouldn't answer. I told Sarah we weren't supposed to talk to strangers. So she asked him his name. Then she introduced him and me and said we weren't strangers anymore. She thought that was terribly clever.
Lily stared out at the gulls swooping low over the shifting blues of the water. This was where she always stopped, the point she couldn't go beyond, not out loud. There was pressure in her chest, as if all the words were backed up there, pressing, all but cutting off her breath. Rule moved behind her and began to rub her arms gently, up and down. The repetitive touch soothed her physically. She grew aware of him standing there, just behind her, not touching, not asking questions or making her deal with his shock and anger, just there.
He got us to go with him to his car. He didn't try to talk us into getting in. That would have scared us. He said he needed help getting his picnic stuff to the beach, and we were helpful little girls. We went with him. We didn't think about the trunk, that it could be dangerous. He hit Sarah. I saw that and tried to get away. I don't remember him hitting me, but I woke up in his trunk. My head hurt, and I tasted vomit in my mouth. Sarah was crying. The car would turn and we'd bump into each other, but we couldn't see each other. It was so dark. You felt like you couldn't breathe, like all that dark was sucking the air right out of you.
Breathe now.
He wrapped his arms around her.
Breathe, Lily. You're safe.
He was wrong. There was no safety. But his arms felt good. She leaned back against him.
He drove around until night when he took us to his house.
Sarah was a pink and white little girl with pretty blonde hair. Her bad luck. He tied me up, saved me for later. But I was there. I was in the room when he raped her. I don't think he meant to kill her. He looked so surprised.
That was one of the worst parts for some reason. The surprise on his face when Sarah stopped moving, when her legs stopped kicking and her eyes bulged open, unblinking. He'd choked her, but he couldn't seem to connect what he'd done with her being dead.
It scared him. He wanted me to agree that it had been an accident. I did. I agreed with everything he said.
Rule rested his chin on the top of her head. He was wrapped all around her now, and it helped. It helped. He didn't speak, and that helped too. For a few moments, she stood there and let comfort seep into her body from his.
I was lucky. I didn't know it then, but someone had seen him put us in the trunk. A jogger. She got the license plate number. The police had been looking for his car for hours. They found it just in time. For me. Not for Sarah. He didn't rape me. The officer who spotted the plates called it in, but he didn't wait. He broke the door down. He came in alone, against regs. He said later he'd had a feeling that he couldn't wait for backup. He was a patrolman, only a few years on the force. It was Frederick Randall.
Hell.
Yeah. That's why I had to go to Internal Affairs. I couldn't be sure I was seeing him clearly because of our history. But he feels betrayed. I heard him.
You said he's a cop all the way down. That means putting the job first. That's what you did. He'll see that, sooner or later.
Maybe. Ginger was right, you know. I did join the police to feel safer. When you know in your blood and bones that there really are monsters, you want to do what you can to get them locked up. And you want as many others on your side fighting those monsters as you can get.
You chose to work homicide.
Murder doesn't destroy just one person. It sends out shockwaves that hurt so many. It broke something inside Ginger. She was a pain when she was 11, but lots of girls that age are a pain. Especially to their little sisters and their sisters' friends. But she wasn't all twisted up the way she is now.
You warned her. You offered as much help as you could.
She spotted a jogger along the road. His dog, a big black lab, loped alongside him happily.
What's it like? To be a wolf, I mean. Do you think and feel as a wolf? Do you feel safe then, knowing you're stronger, faster, able to heal almost anything that's done to you?
Yeah, the wolf is always with the human, and the human is always with the wolf. I'm myself in both forms, though. Not exactly the same self. Are you still yourself when you sleep? When you dream?
I see what you mean.
Lily turned her head slightly so she could breathe him in. His scent settled her. One of Lily's questions really needed no answer. No one was safe.
Is it a problem for you, me being a cop?
A complication. Lily.
Yes?
What happened to him?
The pressure in her chest was gone.
He was on death row for 13 years. Lots of appeals. They finally executed him.
We handle things differently in the clans, but I guess your system worked. Eventually.
There are reasons for appeals. The law doesn't always get it right. But he was locked up all that time. He didn't grab any more little girls.
He was silent. She let herself rest against him a little longer. It hadn't been so bad, telling him. He'd made it go easier than she'd expected. Or maybe that had been the mate bond, tricking her into trusting him. At the moment, it didn't seem to matter. She felt clearer, as if telling her story had let it settle into the past a bit more. Lily turned her head, looking up into his eyes.
Ready to go chase monsters?
What did you have in mind?
The Most Reverend Patrick Harlow wasn't at the church. Neither did they find the dubiously helpful deacon. The church secretary regarded Lily's request to speak with the church's leader with deep suspicion. A dead end. They tried his house with an equal lack of success. Frustrated, Lily glared at the door. Spanish style, hand-carved, and very old. It suited the well-maintained 4,000-foot stucco home. They did find two of Harlow's neighbors at home. They spoke of a man who fit the house. Urbane, upper-middle class, at ease in social gatherings. The first woman didn't like him much, though she didn't say so. The older couple both thought highly of him. She and Rule were eating seafood tacos when her cell phone rang.
You here?
Lily, could you come over here? I'm at home and I think somebody's watching me.
Have you called it in?
You mean the police? No, I can't. Some of them are in it. You know who I mean. I need you to come right away.
We'll be right there.
Hurry!
Ginger's apartment was on the other side of the city. They were halfway there when her cell phone rang again. This time, it was Kuronsky.
That turned up some interesting connections between the Church of the Faithful and that little church your Sergeant Meckel attends. We're leaving now to have a chat with Harlow.
Good luck. I struck out at the church and his home.
Right.
I should have checked in with you first. I'm still thinking this one's mine. Sorry. We're headed for Ginger Harris's apartment. She thinks someone's watching her.
I was going to ask you to join us for the meet with Harlow.
You mean you got hold of him?
Reached him on his cell phone. He's driving back from L.A. We're meeting him in Oceanside in 20 minutes.
Damn!
Lily wanted in on that interview, but Ginger might be in real trouble, or spooked enough to cough up a few more facts.
I guess I'll have to read your report.
I'll fill you in. I've left a key for you at the front desk here. If you finish up before we do, let yourselves in. Get comfortable. Order anything you like, as long as it's coffee.
It was nearly 5 when they left Ginger's. Ginger had been drinking. It didn't bring out her best side. She'd alternated between abusing them for putting her in danger and begging Lily and Rule to stay there and protect her.
What do you think? Was she for real or was she playing us?
I don't know. Ginger is a good liar, but I don't think she can make herself smell scared. She's frightened, but that could be the product of guilt and alcohol.
I wish she'd agreed to a safe house. Not that I have the authority to arrange one, but Croft could. Maybe we should stick around, keep an eye on her place.
Neither of us can protect her from sorcery. As she pointed out, a safe house wouldn't either.
Yes, but... oh, I don't know. Something's not adding up.
You want to give Kuronsky a call and see if it's too late to join them?
Oh, yeah. But... if they're still talking, it could throw things off for us to show up this far into things. I'm going to pretend I'm a grown-up and know how to let someone else run with the ball once in a while.
Where, then?
Kuronsky mentioned coffee. Let's head to their hotel and see if caffeine will wake up a few of my brain cells. I need to think.
Croft and Kuronsky were on the 10th floor of a hotel that specialized in suites for business travelers. The small sitting room was pleasant enough in its generic fashion, with the usual amenities, including a round table with 4 chairs. An improvement over the conferencing arrangements at Lily's apartment. Although no one sat. The air was thick with Lily and Rule's incredulity at the agent's abrupt about-face.
Look, like Martin said, we got a little carried away. We don't have evidence that Therese Martin was killed by sorcery, much less that the Church of the Faithful is implicated.
Abel, how did they get to you?
I'm gonna pretend I didn't hear that.
Just hold on a minute. We don't want to let our tempers take over.
Rule glanced at Lily, who looked calm. She didn't smell calm.
Get ready. They may go for their guns.
She'd sub-vocalized it, a trick used often among Lupi, not one Rule expected her to be aware of.
Rule and I were taken aback, that's all. I thought we were all on the same page, but it looks like you've skipped to a different chapter and don't want to fill us in on the details. Am I right?
That's about it.
Okay. I don't agree, but you're the ones with the badges. I take it you don't want me on the case anymore.
We'll be moving on ourselves. There's no case here for us.
Well, I guess we'll take our coffee and go. No hard feelings?
Lily held out her hand, and finally Rule caught on. He eased closer to the two agents and stood ready.
Of course not.
Croft stood and shook her hand. Rule heard the slight catch in her breath.
Kuronsky?
Lily turned and held her hand out to him.
No hard feelings?
Kuronsky seemed more confused than relieved, but gave her hand a brisk shake. Lily pulled her hand back, holding it slightly away from her body. Her eyes cut to Rule, making sure he was with her. He nodded. Lily backed up a step, putting space between herself and the agents.
You're bespelled, both of you.
What? You're joking.
I just shook your hand. It's the same feel. The same ugly feel as the magic used to kill Therese Martin is all over you.
Can't be. I know my protection spells. Martin and I can't be tampered with that way.
Think about it. Think about what you believed before you spoke to this man. Compare that to what you think now. You just told me there's nothing to pursue with Harlow and the Azah, that you intend to drop the case.
Croft frowned.
I changed my mind.
Abel, you performed your own test at the murder scene. Why would you say there's no evidence that it was done by sorcery?
Because...
Karonsky's face screwed up as if he'd bitten into bad meat.
My spells aren't admissible as evidence except in certain rare and strictly defined instances.
But they did show that the woman was murdered by sorcery, didn't they?
Definitely. The traces were strong, unquestionably the result of sorcery, and... I forgot what I was going to say.
Lily looked at Rule.
A persuasion spell, maybe? What do you know about persuasion spells?
Not much.
Well, they're pretty weak stuff, generally, even when used by someone with a gift of charisma. Huh, that's funny. I remember thinking when I met Harlow that I wouldn't be surprised if he had a touch of that gift.
We were there too long.
Beads of sweat stood on Croft's forehead, as if he'd been exerting himself.
We arrived at 3:30. We got back here at 5:30, but I don't remember enough. I can't account for enough of the time.
Shit! You're right. We interviewed him for about 10 minutes, and then... I can't remember. Was someone else there? Did someone come in when we were talking to Harlow?
I don't remember.
Croft looked at Lily.
You're right. We've been tampered with. You can't trust us.
What do you do with a pair of special agents who've lost their minds? Or parts of them? Lily tried to determine the extent of the tampering. The two agents were willing, and they tried to cooperate, but it was soon obvious they couldn't reason their way past what had been done to them. After 20 minutes, Rule put a hand on Lily's shoulder.
I think we'd better stop. Pushing them any further might damage their minds permanently.
Croft stared at his hands, clasped on the table, his face chalky with strain. Karonsky simply muttered.
I can't trust myself. I can't remember what happened. I can't trust myself. This is unacceptable.
They need medical help, or some kind of help. I'm out of my depth here. If only we could get them to call their boss, he could...
Brooks, you mean? I already called him. He knows we're pulling out.
Right, that's good. You know, you aren't looking so hot. Maybe you should lie down.
I'm not...
Croft rubbed his forehead.
Have we been drinking? I can't seem to think straight.
Sedate us.
I can arrange that.
Do it while I still remember why.
Rule took out his phone.
While I arrange things, Lily, talk to them about anything other than the case. Karonsky likes basketball.
A half hour later, Nettie Two Horses strode in.
I hope you know what you're doing. Where are my patients?
Right here. I hope you know, too.
Two muscular men followed Nettie into the room. They looked at Rule for a moment, then fanned out. Croft rose to his feet when they entered. He had a tense, ready-for-trouble look.
What's going on?
You weren't feeling well, remember? This is Dr. Two Horses. She's going to examine you.
I'm feeling better. I don't need a doctor.
Nettie set her bag on the table.
Why don't I check you out, just to be sure, since I'm here?
Croft moved closer to Karonsky.
I don't think so.
It's all right, Martin. We asked them to come.
I don't remember that.
Croft's forehead glistened.
Yeah, well, we're having a little trouble with our memories, aren't we? That's why they're here.
I don't know.
Croft's eyes darted around the room. Nettie and Lily stood closest to him at the table. Rule walked their way. The two young men were working slowly closer, coming from the sides.
We weren't having any problems until they showed up.
He went for his gun.
Martin, no!
Karonsky hit Croft's arm. The other men turned into blurs of speed. 2 seconds later, Lily had her weapon out, but it wasn't needed. One of the two young Lupi held Croft's arms. He sagged, dazed. Lily thought the other one had hit him, but it had happened so fast.
All over?
Lily saw Nettie Two Horses on the floor, where she dropped with admirable alacrity.
Pretty much.
Rule stood next to Karonsky.
You okay, Abel?
No.
He stood, white and shaking.
Oh, hell no. Hanging on by my teeth. I can't remember why we're letting you do this. It's like swimming in butter to try to think. Damn it.
You get the first dose. Don't worry, your partner will be fine. Sammy didn't hit him too hard. You can get the trunks now, Sammy. Lily, you can put that up.
Lily glanced at the gun still in her hand, shrugged, and holstered it. The red-headed Lupus went out the door and came back with a large empty trunk, and then a second. They put the agents in the trunks. Sammy and the other young man each carried one out, handling it as easily as if it were empty, which is what they hoped anyone watching would assume. Once they reached the panel van they'd arrived in, the agents could be removed from their cramped quarters. Lily began gathering up the papers and folders on the table.
Your men are alarmingly well-versed at getting bodies out of hotel rooms.
They watch TV crime dramas. I take it we're keeping clues from whoever comes to see why Karansky and Croft don't return to headquarters?
We're taking temporary custody of everything. We'll turn it over when the time comes. Get the laptop, will you?
Are we going to tell anyone about this?
When someone comes asking, yes. Not now. I'd rather not spend the next 24 hours or so locked up. We know at least one SDPD officer is with the bad guys, so they're out. And the local feds would pretty much have to take us into custody and holler for someone from MCD to come sort things out.
I have a few questions before I go. I understand you're a sensitive, Lily.
She glanced quickly at Rule, then away.
Yes.
What can you tell me about the feel of the spell on these two?
Ugly. Raspy and sort of rotten mushy, like touching fresh shit with ground glass in it. Will you be able to help them?
I don't know. I can keep them sedated, but I'll need to know more about the spell before I try removing it.
I smelled it.
What? You didn't tell me.
At first, I didn't know what I was smelling. It was faint, and I've never encountered its like before. Later, I didn't get the chance. Unfortunately, sub-vocalizing only works one way between us.
That was weird, by the way. Handy, but weird. That's how you told those two men of yours what to do, sub-vocalizing?
He nodded.
So what does the spell smell like?
Putrefaction.
Nettie looked at him sharply.
I'm told that death magic has the same reek.
They left the hotel at twilight. The air itself seemed gray, as if all the color had bled out of it. Lily rubbed her temples and tried to organize her thoughts.
One thing I don't understand. Why did Harlow tamper with them? He should know by now that you're sensitive. He took quite a risk.
I hadn't thought of that. There might be a communication problem in their camp, and he didn't know. More likely, though, he didn't realize that I'm able to tell. I'm a lot more sensitive than most.
I don't know much about it.
Most sensitives don't pick up secondary magic unless it's really strong. They'd be able to shake your hand and know you were a Lupus, but they wouldn't feel the lingering magic on the floors of your father's house, left by the feet of many Lupi.
You felt that?
Lily nodded.
Harlow might have thought that even if I picked up on the spell, no one would listen. I'm off the force, discredited. Croft and Karansky were the only ones who'd believe me, and they're the ones bespelled.
Not a comfortable thought, considering we're likely to be visited by someone looking for them.
We have to hope that MCD has witches on the payroll who can confirm the existence of the spell. A coven would be good. Solo practitioners can't summon as much power, or perform the more intricate spells.
I'd assume they don't have a sorcerer, given that sorcery's illegal. Damn it, I wish we could find Cullen.
So do I.
Though not, she suspected, for the same reasons.
I hate to sound ignorant, but why would a sorcerer be better than a coven? A first-rate coven can draw a lot of power.
According to Cullen, sorcerers see magic. That's how they're able to work directly with the forces involved, unlike shamans and witches. I'm guessing that a sorcerer would be able to look at Karansky and Croft and see the spell binding them. A great aid in removing it, I would think.
That would be handy.
If they could trust the sorcerer in question. Rule had a great deal of confidence in his friend. Lily didn't.
I can think of one more reason Harlow took the risk of bespelling Karansky and Croft.
What?
They've got something big planned for the very near future. And it was more important to get the feds out of the way than to maintain his cover.
God, what would a group like this consider big?
They lapsed into silence. Was it the growing darkness that made her so aware of Rule? Not that she'd been unaware of him before. All day she'd felt him near, known where he was without needing to see him. But the nature of it had shifted. Now it prickled along her skin, gathered in a hot ball in her belly. She could almost feel his breath, as if some part of her was leaning toward him, even though she sat perfectly still. She shook her head.
Oh, this is not the time, damn it!
She needed a clear head, not the fog of lust. She was missing something. Something important.
Shit! Ginger!
You think they did to her what they did to Karansky and Croft?
No. She touched my face when she made that dig about my makeup, and all I felt was annoyed. No, what hit me right now is that she decoyed us. Kept me from going to the meet with Harlow, didn't she? They didn't want me there. I couldn't be spelled and would have stumbled onto their plot.
He checked the mirror and made a sudden left turn across two lanes. Lily grabbed the dash.
What the?
They've used her twice. First to implicate me, then to draw you away from the meeting with Harlow. But we know about her. She's pure liability to them now.
20 minutes later, Lily stood, weapon drawn, in the corridor outside Ginger's apartment, waiting for Rule to climb in through her third-floor balcony door. 7 more sweaty minutes later, the door opened.
She's not here.
Neither, it turned out, were some of her clothes.
Either she packed in a hurry and cleared out, or they want us to think that. Is police work always this frustrating?
Sometimes it's worse. At least we have some leads. You want to pick up a pizza? Lunch was a long time ago.
If we went to my place instead of yours, I could fix you a real meal.
You cook?
I eat, therefore I cook. Quite well, too. How can you not cook?
Takeout. And my uncle owns a restaurant.
She considered the offer, then shook her head.
I have to let Harry in. Besides, so far the reporters haven't linked the two of us. It would only take one busybody hanging around your place to change that.
Your place, then.
Lily lapsed into silence, thinking about their list of suspects. Some of them certainly involved, some with a big fat question mark after their names. Ginger, the Most Reverend Patrick Harlow, Mech, Captain Randall, Cullen Seaborn, though he was only on her list, not Rule's. Someone in Nokolai, from what he'd told her of his father's attack, who might or might not be the lupus who'd killed Carlos Fuentes.
You know what's missing? Motive. There are a lot of people involved. Can they all really be nuts about stopping the citizenship bill? There are a lot of ways to keep a bill from passing that don't involve murder.
The old one, the Azaa worship, doesn't think as a human would.
And Lupi don't either, I guess. But it's mostly humans we're dealing with. Humans who are either carrying out her instructions or making things up themselves. Western 21st century humans. Why? What do they get out of it?
I see your point, but fanaticism isn't reserved to certain portions of the globe.
So you think it's religious fervor? It's more fun to kill the non-believers than just to defeat a bill they don't like?
Well, fanatics have been known to see things that way.
But they're risking so much. This church of theirs is just getting started here, but according to the FBI, they're picking up members at a fair clip. Donations, too. They cultivate a mainstream look, as if they plan to settle in for the long haul. Look at that house of Harlow's. Money and position matter to him. Why would he risk everything this way?
Maybe he has no choice. We saw what they could do to federal agents who believed themselves protected.
He turned off on her street.
I'm not suggesting everyone involved is under a compulsion spell, but some of the bad guys may have been influenced in ways they couldn't guard against.
Mech, or Randall, or whoever it was. That's possible. I don't pick up anything through clothing, usually, and I don't go around touching other officers. But compulsion spells are supposed to be very limited. The victim is compelled to one particular act, and it has to happen quickly, or the spell loses its power.
That's the problem with dealing with an old one, even at a remove. We don't know what's possible and what isn't.
What if it wasn't a spell? There are mind gifts that, being innate, don't rely on spells. Karansky said something about Harlow being charismatic.
I don't think so. A charisma gift boosted by power from her might be irresistibly persuasive, but it wouldn't wipe out memory. Croft and Karansky lost more than an hour.
Drugs could do that. But why did they need to wipe out that hour? Speaking of that lost hour, at least we know it takes them a while to do whatever they did. It isn't just zap, you're possessed.
Or, It took an hour to question them and learn everything they know about the case.
You're not lifting my spirits.
She swung the door open and flipped on the single light, a floor lamp by her chair. Harry streaked past her, heading for the kitchen and the food dish Rule had filled that morning.
You make it sound kinky. You and Harry, two males in my bed at the same time.
You could have that, you know.
What? If you're offering to get together a threesome, don't.
I'm saying that you aren't bound only to me. Not sexually. If you choose to have others in your bed, you can.
She turned her back on him, setting Croft's briefcase on the table.
Maybe by your standards, that's a polite offer. By mine, it rates about a 9 on the yuck scale. And I'm not extending the same privilege to you.
You don't have to. I will never be with another woman again.
Lupi, I don't believe in fidelity.
It has nothing to do with beliefs. You're my chosen.
Slowly, she faced him again. Feeling so tense, a sudden move might shatter something.
You mean that you can't be with another woman? It isn't possible?
Physically, it might be possible, but to the lupus half of a bonded pair, it would feel filthy, a violation, like rape or incest.
Lily realized her hands were clenched and forced them to relax. Her palms felt clammy.
What about the human half?
The woman, being human, reacts as a human. She behaves as her nature and her beliefs dictate.
You mean I could be unfaithful and you couldn't?
I wouldn't put it in those terms, but yes.
Why are you telling me this?
He didn't respond right away. The shadows cast by the single lamp made a mystery of his expression, and his body was utterly still.
Earlier, you trusted me with a very tender place inside you. I wish to return the gift.
She took a step toward him. He was making himself vulnerable to her, but she didn't understand. What did he fear or hope?
How would you feel if I took another lover?
I wouldn't like it.
Another step.
Rule, what's the difference between the mate bond and falling in love? Aside from the fact that the bond is imposed on us, I mean.
I don't know. Loop, I don't fall in love. I don't know if you experience the bond the same way I do.
One last step, and she stood close to him, looking up at that beautiful, exotic face, the slashes of eyebrows, sculpted cheeks, and eyes so dark.
How do you experience it?
His mouth crooked up on one side. He lifted his hand and laid the tips of his fingers on her cheek.
As bliss and pain.
To a human, that sounds a lot like love.
Does it?
He skimmed his knuckles down her cheek, her throat, leaving a tingling wake.
For me, love is what I feel for my brothers, my father, my son.
Not your mother?
That's a story for another time. You and I don't know each other well enough to love yet, do we? I hope it would be good if we grew to be friends.
Yes, that would be good.
She went up on tiptoe and kissed him. Not the hungry kiss she'd thought of, off and on all day. A gentle kiss. One that spoke of hope. Almost hesitantly, his lips answered hers. Slowly, she eased up against him, lifting her hands to his face, cradling it as she deepened the kiss. His cheeks were rough with beard stubble, his body firm and angular. His mouth tasted of last night's passion and today's discoveries, of coffee and man. But it was his skin that fascinated her, the texture of it, the warmth.
Am I supposed to want you this much? I should be working. I need to...
Nadia, you are supposed to have me anytime, anywhere, any way you wish. Work will still be there afterward.
Could she take a few minutes for herself? Would it be right? She eased back slightly and looked in his eyes. Yes, she decided. And she would give those minutes to him, too.
In that case, I want you slowly. Very slowly.
She woke to find herself sprawled over him, with his chest heaving and tears in her eyes, and knew herself changed, quietly and forever. He ran a hand down her back.
You're trembling.
Sensory overload.
Which could bring on strange fancies. That's all it was, the odd fancy of an overwhelmed nervous system. People don't change in any fundamental way between one blink of the eye and the next. She was still herself. But her arm shook slightly when she propped herself up to look at him.
Hey, something wrong?
He shook his head slightly, his expression bemused.
You pack a punch.
Had he felt it, too?
Stop that.
Nothing had happened. Nothing except incredible sex, that is.
So do you. And now that I've had my way with you, we'd better...
What hey. The...
Lily looked over her shoulder into a pair of glaring yellow eyes.
Feed the cat.
Right. And then we'd better get back to work.
But they accomplished very little more that evening. They were going through the papers in Croft's briefcase and recent files on the laptop they'd brought from the agent's room when Nettie called. Her patients were installed in her guest bedroom, still asleep and under guard. It would take time to discover what had been done to them, if she could do it at all. They did at least find the connection Karansky had mentioned so briefly when he called Lily. The elders of Mech's church, a fundamentalist Christian denomination, had secretly raised and donated a substantial amount to the Church of the Faithful.
Strange bedfellows.
You'd think, but they found a common cause.
Lily passed him a printout. It seemed that both churches believed fervently in the need to safeguard the purity of the human race. Both opposed the citizenship bill and spoke of the destruction of decency and civilization. Though they defined decency very differently, they agreed that the Lupi were creatures of the devil who should be exterminated, not enfranchised.
How could Mech buy into this drivel?
How does anyone buy into it? Bigots are everywhere.
Among the Lupi?
Certainly. Not all of the tales of Lupus savagery are fabrications. There have been those of us who preyed on humans. For some, Lupi or humans, honor extends only as far as the line they've drawn between us and them.
Lily awoke disoriented. She wasn't in her bed, she was... She blinked, then smiled, curled up with Rule in her chair and a half. She turned her head to look at him. He was bristly with morning beard, his head tilted back, eyes closed, mouth slightly open. So much less elegant than the man she'd seen in Club Hell. Lily sat up carefully, but the phone had already woken Rule.
I can't feel my left hand.
Sorry.
Lily stood, looking around for her phone. She'd left it in her purse, which was... not ringing.
Oh, I think it's mine.
Rule stood, shaking his left hand and frowning. Lily grinned as he headed for the bedroom, where he'd left his phone in his jacket. There was something somehow endearing about a werewolf's hand going to sleep. A moment later, he was back, all sleepiness wiped away.
That was Max. He says there's a message for me from Cullen at the club. He wants me to come see it.
Lily stared at the message written in sloppy cursive above the bar at Club Hell.
Rule, don't believe me. Don't come. And don't mention this.
The letters were still smoking. Beside them, they saw a crude map. At least, that's what Lily assumed it was.
It's Cullen's handwriting.
Does he often leave you notes burned into walls?
No.
Max was perched on top of the bar, glowering at Lily.
I know she's got great knockers, but did you have to bring her with you?
Max had been grouching about Lily's presence ever since they arrived.
Are all gnomes obnoxious little perverts, or is it just you?
What the hell are you talking about? Just because I'm on the short side doesn't mean you can...
Save it, Max. She's a sensitive.
Max's squinty little eyes opened as wide as they were able.
No shit?
You want to just put a notice in the paper and save yourself the trouble of telling people one at a time?
Max will no more tattle on you than you would him. Will you, Max?
Haven't I taught you better than that? If you have to ask if you can trust someone, you can't.
I trust you. I also trust Lily.
Yeah? Well, you're young. So what do you make of the vandalism to my place?
I don't know. He says not to come, but he drew a map. That upside-down V must be a mountain. An SD would stand for San Diego, but the rest of it...
The squiggles might be water. And that's the number 5, isn't it? 5 miles, maybe. I'd better make a copy.
Don't bother, knockers. I already did.
Max held out a sheet of paper. Her eyebrows rose. It wasn't a sketch. It was an exact replica in blue ink.
He's in trouble.
More likely he's test driving a new spell. Pick my wall to do it on, dammit. I'll have a word or two with him when he finally shows up.
Max reminded Lily of a parent with a kid in trouble. Mad on top, worried underneath.
You think he's in trouble too.
Who knows with a jerk-off like him.
Breakfast. Max, I know you've got mushrooms. If you can find some eggs too, we'll eat. We need fuel and coffee. And then, I think, we need to talk.
They adjourned to Max's private quarters above the club, a crowded hodgepodge of kitsch and art. Max saw her studying a little statue of Michelangelo's David and smirked.
Mike copied me, but what the hell? He did a good job. Let him take the credit.
They'd argued downstairs. Rule wanted to tell Max everything. Lily agreed that they needed help, but a lewd gnome with a bad attitude wasn't the source she'd have picked.
Max has been around a very long time. He's seen things that are myth or history to us, and he can't be corrupted by our enemies.
You have a lot of faith in your friends.
Don't they teach you anything these days about those of the blood? Gnomes can't be corrupted by spell or by gift. They're too bloody stubborn. Max has no loyalty to ideals as you or I think of them, but he would literally stop breathing before he betrayed a friend.
Rule had persuaded her. So, over mushroom omelets, Rule really did know how to cook. They filled Max in. Rule got as far as mentioning, without naming, the one the Azah worshipped when Max interrupted.
She? Who's she? Don't talk in riddles.
Instead of answering, Rule asked for a pencil and paper, then in three swift strokes, drew what looked like an advertising logo. A line drawing of an egg lying on its side with a slash through it.
Oh, for Christ's sake. God damn it, all the hell. If only they'd fucking go there and stay, the bloody...
Max went on for longer than Lily had ever heard anyone curse before. Eventually, he stopped and wiped his forehead.
Tell me the rest.
He didn't speak again until Lily described what had been done to the two agents. Then he asked a number of precise questions. Finally, he nodded.
Okay, first, your federal cops weren't bespelled. There's a fucking difference between spellcasting and mind gifts, which no one these days...
Skip the diatribe on our degenerate times. How do we tell the difference?
Sorcery ain't like Wicca. If you work with power directly, you gotta shape it, which means you gotta get the patterns of the spell inside you. Mind gifts, you're born with. They're already part of you, like feet. You don't have to understand how your feet are made to walk on them, which is one reason sorcerers are so blasted stuck on themselves, thinking they know so much more than anyone else. Hell, never mind that. The point is, the results come out different. Your two feds had these thoughts they couldn't get away from, set up like a loop. That means someone put those thoughts there and tied them in place with a good jolt of power.
Thoughts can't be put in place with a spell?
Yeah, if you're an adept, which no one in this realm is, or any of the nearby realms either, never mind what his hoity-toityness and fairy thinks.
Lily blinked. Was he talking about the king of fairy?
This, goddess of theirs couldn't make someone into an adept?
Nope. Not that she would if she could, but she can't work here directly. Has to work through her tools, people native to this realm. Can't just hand someone the words and gestures to a spell and have it work, can she? No more than I could hand you a stone and chisel and you'd chip out a bust of Rule here. But she can give them power.
He leaned back in his chair, a bar stool with arms and a footrest, and laced his hands over his belly.
Now, the way it works is, the new thoughts have to blend natural with the old ones. If you give someone who dotes on pretty little birdies a bunch of bird-hating thoughts, they're more likely to go crazy than to do whatever it is you wanted them to. So your telepath gets into someone's mind and...
Telepath? Speaking of crazy, aren't telepaths driven insane by their gift?
Yeah, unless they're cats. So, you have any reason to think you're dealing with sanity here?
Unless they're cats?
Are we dealing with two threats? One is a telepath, the other a sorcerer, or... Could both skills belong to the same person?
You ain't listening to me. You don't have one bloody reason to think a sorcerer's involved.
Hold on a minute. I felt the magic used to kill Martin.
Yeah, but you're as ignorant of sorcery as most fools these days. What you felt was power. Power generated by death magic, which your U.S. laws call sorcery, but that law was written by ignoramuses. Power is not the same as sorcery. A sorcerer could use raw power for a slice and dice, yeah, but so could anybody if they had a tool that stored enough juice.
Okay, so we may or may not have a sorcerer, but we know we have a crazy telepath who practices death magic and has access to a great deal of power.
Plus, this telepath is under her thumb, and she wants you dead or otherwise inconvenienced. Your best bet is to leave the country.
You know that's not possible.
I knew it. I just knew you wouldn't be sensible. Second choice would be her.
He nodded at Lily.
What do you mean?
Send knockers after your Looney Tunes. Can't bespell her. Can't get inside of her mind. Sensitives are immune, period. She's the only one who can get close enough to do much. Anyone else gets blasted.
Lily asked a few more questions before they left, but Max didn't have much more he could tell them. A few guesses, a couple of shrugs.
It was a damn stupid idea talking to Max. Just don't let him give you any damn stupid ideas.
Such as?
You are not going after Harlow alone.
I can't, can I? You'd have to be nearby. Do you think Harlow's the telepath? I'm not sure.
Who, then?
Rule jammed down on the accelerator. The man was in a seriously bad mood.
Well, if we accept Max's opinion as a working hypothesis, the telepath in question is nuts. Yesterday we talked to several people who know Harlow and didn't get a hint of anything like that.
Crazy doesn't always show.
True.
Rule was scared for Lily. That's why he was so angry. It made her feel odd, disoriented. It wasn't as if no one cared if she put herself in jeopardy. Her family worried, though she took care to keep most of the scary stuff from them. But the risk inherent in her job was one reason they disliked it. Why did Rule's reaction make her feel so funny?
Lily, you aren't thinking of going after him alone, are you?
He has to be questioned, and backup won't help if Harlow, or whoever, can screw around with their minds.
With a jolt, she understood why Rule's reaction left her feeling all turned around. She liked it. She liked being important to him, but it was the mate bond making him feel this way. It messed with his feelings just like their hypothetical telepath had messed with the minds of the two FBI agents.
If he can't screw around with your mind, he might settle for killing you.
What do you think I've been doing the last few years? Going to tea parties? I've arrested plenty of people who would have been glad of a chance to kill me. They didn't get it.
Damn it, Lily, you can't arrest him anyway. You don't have a badge.
Even if I did, we don't have enough evidence yet for an arrest. I do wish that I'd accepted the position with the feds, though. Aside from the problem with making an arrest, the two of us aren't enough.
I can call on roughly 2,000 clan members. What do you need?
Just like that? I thought your father had all the authority.
Technically, I have no authority, but if the Lununcio tells someone the clan needs him urgently, he'll come. Or she will. Some of our sisters and daughters marry out, but many remain within the clan.
A sudden thought made her grin.
I see. You're like grandmother. No technical authority, but if she says come, we come.
I really need to meet your grandmother.
Yeah, be careful what you ask for. We need to figure out what Seaborn's map represents, even if we aren't sure why he sent it. We need to finish the financials. Croft ran the ones on the church, but we should look at Harlow, too. A few trained law enforcement personnel would be nice, but I don't suppose you have any of those.
Crystal and I should be able to handle the financial aspects if you tell us what to look for.
Lily raised her eyebrows.
Crystal?
My assistant. I don't think you've met her. The map has me puzzled, but Walker knows the wilderness areas around here intimately. He might be able to identify some of the features. I can't get you any law enforcement personnel, but I can summon some security. I should have done it earlier.
If you mean bodyguards...
I do. Has it occurred to you that if Max is right, Harlow and company know everything that Croft and Karansky did? Which includes the mate bond. You're the only one immune to their tampering. You're also the key to controlling me. The only real question in my mind is whether they'll try to grab you or just kill you.
They went to Rule's apartment. Hers was simply too small. He'd made several phone calls en route, and they'd soon be joined by a number of Nokalai. Rule lived on the 10th floor of a high-rise.
Why would a claustrophobe want to ride up and down in an elevator every day?
I'm not phobic, and Nokalai owns the building, so it's practical for me to live here.
So, don't call the man a claustrophobe just because small spaces scare him. Right.
She had Croft's briefcase. Rule was carrying Karansky's laptop.
Besides, it's a fast elevator. What about you? You okay in small spaces?
Mostly. I don't do saunas.
Her long-ago abductor's trunk had been swelteringly hot.
When I moved here, I thought it might desensitize me to ride the elevator every day.
Did it help?
Not noticeably. I'm going to make some coffee.
Why am I not surprised?
She turned to face the windows.
Where should I?
The apartment had an open floor plan, and almost the entire west wall was window. It overlooked the ocean.
That's the other reason I live here.
Apparently the coffee craving wasn't too strong yet, because he stayed beside her.
That has to be one of the best views in the city.
I think so.
She tore her gaze from the sea and skyscape and looked around the apartment itself. There was a long, sleek couch covered in a beautiful pale leather, and in newspapers, magazines, and books. The dining table was some rich, dark wood. What she could see of it, that is. Everywhere she looked, she saw beautiful things. And clutter.
It's not as tidy as you're used to.
She glanced at him. That wasn't a hint of a flush riding those elegant cheekbones, was it?
Who would have guessed? You're a slob.
Oh, it's not that bad.
It's a mess!
She turned and put her arms around his waist, smiling as she laid her head on his shoulder.
But that's okay. Under the mess, it's a beautiful place.
He pressed a kiss to her hair. The arms he slid around her were hard with tension as well as muscle. He cleared his throat.
So, what do you think? Could Harry be happy here? There's lots of room.
Oh, shit. He wasn't really talking about Harry.
I don't know. He couldn't get outside from here. He's been on his own a long time. I'm not sure he could adapt to being penned up inside all the time.
He didn't say anything, but his body remained tense. Unhappy? Hurt? She tilted her head back to look at his face and found his eyes, dark and grave, waiting to meet
Maybe
hers.
Maybe we could try him here for a little while, see how it goes.
Good idea.
He used both hands to smooth her hair back from her face.
You ready for coffee?
Sure, why not? mind if I clear a space on the table?
My piles are organized, even if they don't look like it. Scoot them to the other end, but keep them separate.
She saw what he meant when she started moving the stacks of papers. This wasn't the random junk mail mess of advertising and charitable solicitations. It was quarterly reports, correspondence, and other business-type
debris.
Looks
like you need an office.
She sat down, opening Croft's briefcase.
I've got one. I prefer to work out here.
He set a mug by her elbow and sat across from her.
I do work, you know. I manage the Rose investments for the clan.
You oversee everything?
Not all by myself. I have an excellent assistant, whom you'll be meeting soon. Also, two secretaries and managers for the individual properties. We keep a very expensive accounting firm busy and have a legal firm on retainer.
So where is this staff of yours?
They're clan, so they live and work at clan home. The last few days haven't exactly been normal. Usually I spend about half my time there.
Okay, that made sense. It also underlined how little she really knew
Here's
about him.
Here's the material on Harlow.
She took a file from Croft's
briefcase. We have his social security number, checking account number, that sort of thing. Can you do something with that?
Sure. What am I looking for?
Connections. Things that don't add up. Properties he owns. Does he have a house or business in Oceanside, for example, where he met Croft and Koronsky? Anything else up that way? We've only his word for it that he was coming back from L.A. yesterday.
It'll take a while. What will you be doing?
Calling a friend to ask a favor. Then I'm going to ride the elevator, maybe take a little walk. We have to know, Rule. We have to find out what the limits of the bond are.
Of course. And I have to get over the idea that something will happen to you if I let you out of my sight. But wait until my people arrive. If you go too far and keel over, it would be nice if someone was there to catch you.
Lily called O'Brien. She thought he might be willing to pass on what he'd learned from Therese's murder scene, and he was, though first he gave her a hard time about having gone over to the dark side. Apparently, the whole department knew she was in trouble with the captain, but was working with the feds. Cops were terrible gossips. Now she stood waiting for the facts in Rule's home office. It was every bit as messy as the Great Room. For some reason, that made her smile. According to Max, if Therese had been killed by a telepath rather than a sorcerer, the killer had probably been on the scene. Eyeball range, he said. Without a spell guiding the power, the killer would have needed to see his victim. He could have stood in the doorway and slashed her up without getting blood on himself. Lily hoped to find something to back that up, It would be good to know for sure if they were dealing with a rogue sorcerer as well as a mad telepath. Cullen Seaborn, maybe. He could have had his mind messed with. But nothing in the crime scene evidence gave Lily any new ideas. She'd gone over it twice by the time Rule's people arrived. Two brawny young men, including the redhead Lily had encountered twice before. The older man with watchful eyes was Walker. And Crystal, Rule's assistant, a short, squat, 60-ish woman who looked disconcertingly like a bulldog. Heavy jaw, square head, thick lips. Lily hoped her astonishment didn't show.
Glad to meet you.
She spared Lily the briefest of glances before returning her attention to Rule.
Nettie wanted me to tell you that she's making progress with Croft, but Koronsky will need to be treated by a coven. Something about the degree of trust involved. Can't say I understood, but that's what she said.
I expect we'll be hearing from their superiors soon. Hopefully they can arrange something with a coven.
What do you need me for?
She dropped her purse on a chair.
I'll show you in a moment, Crystal. First, I need to make everyone aware of something. Lily is my chosen.
That bulldog face just lit up.
Wonderful.
Congratulations.
Just wonderful.
When's the ceremony?
Crystal threw her arms around Rule's waist and hugged him hard. Walker was suddenly at Rule's side, hugging him around the shoulders. Both young men wore wide grins.
Not for a while yet. We have a few things to attend to first.
Oh, sweetie. Oh, sweetie.
She sniffed, patted Rule's cheek, and turned to Lily.
Welcome to Nokolai.
Welcome to...
Lily met Rule's eyes over the woman's head. He shook his head slightly and mouthed, later.
You all know about the attack on the row. You may also be aware that Nettie is treating two FBI agents whose minds were tampered with. These things are connected. There's a group of people, both human and Lupi, who are trying to destroy Nokolai. Lily is a target. She's also the best hope we have for stopping them.
They'd target a chosen?
The Lupi involved may not know she's a chosen. The humans would use it against us.
What do we need to do?
I have a map for you to look at. Sammy and Pat, you'll go with Lily. Crystal is going to help me dig into the finances of one of our enemies.
Lily had never had bodyguards before. She didn't like it.
I'm testing the limits of the mate bond.
She pushed the elevator button.
We need to know how much distance we have.
Sammy nodded. The other one, Pat, smiled shyly.
I've never met a chosen before.
I've never been one before.
The elevator doors opened and she got in, followed by her troops, who took positions between her and the doors. Sammy pushed the lobby button.
I saw a chosen once at the last All Clans.
Sammy jabbed Pat with his elbow.
Excuse me, Lily, but we aren't supposed to talk. It could distract us.
Then listen. The people we're investigating use death magic. Rule says it has a definite smell.
She couldn't see their faces, but the sudden stiffness in their bodies suggested shock.
It's supposed to. I've never smelled it.
I hope you never do. But if you should smell anything rotten, putrefaction, Rule called it, let me know immediately. Don't...
The dizziness hit so fast she couldn't finish the sentence. It was worse this time. A sucking vertigo that made her stagger and brace one hand on the wall, bent over.
Oh, damn it. Damn it, what floor was that?
Second.
Sammy's hand was under her elbow, steadying her.
Are you all right?
Wobbly.
The elevator stopped. Sammy turned to face front again, keeping his hand on her arm, as the doors opened. On three men in dark suits, two of them stood with professional readiness. The third wasn't standing at all. He was in a wheelchair. He was thin, wasted really, with a narrow face and hooked nose.
Ah, Detective Yu. Excellent. I'm Reuben Brooks. I believe you have my men.
Not with me.
She tried to straighten, but had to lean on Sammy when the world grayed out. She tried sub-vocalizing, something she discovered she could do with Rule.
Sammy, you smell anything nasty?
He paused, then shook his head.
All right, then.
Are you ill?
I'll be fine in a few minutes. I have to head back up, though. I'm not trying to get away or anything. Just have to get back.
I think you've misunderstood. I'm not arresting you. I'm here to place my unit at your disposal.
Lily got better once they reached the third floor. And by the time the doors opened at the tenth, she felt fine.
Fascinating. There's quite a sharp boundary, isn't there?
She glanced at one of the silent guards, frowning.
It seems your men filled you in thoroughly.
Were you not in the habit of keeping your superior officer fully informed?
Not about some things, no. Unverifiable evidence didn't go in my reports, and I didn't include anything orally that wasn't pertinent. I don't out people.
Understandable. After we've worked together a while, I believe you'll trust me with such information.
I haven't agreed.
Ah, yes, well, after you.
His motorized chair followed her down the short hall. When she reached Rule's door, she didn't have to use the key he'd given her. He opened it. She walked straight into his arms. It wasn't professional, but it was necessary. She needed to feel his heart beating, needed the pressure of his body against hers. After a moment, though, self-consciousness had her pulling away.
This is Reuben Brooks. I don't know the others. Gentlemen, Rule Turner.
Rule glanced at her, eyebrows raised. She nodded slightly.
Come in, won't you?
He stepped back.
Would you care for coffee?
Coffee steeping in a French press close at hand, the group sat down to compare information.
Croft called you from Clanholm? I didn't realize he was, well, awake.
Dr. Two Horses allowed him out of sleep long enough to... Ah, thank you.
Brooks accepted the mug Rule handed him.
Long enough to report, so I am reasonably up to date on your situation.
How is he?
Doing well, though Dr. Two Horses wishes his mind to be at complete rest for a few days, which means being in sleep most of the time. Kuransky is being kept sedated until a coven can be flown out here. His gift and religious beliefs make treating him, more complicated.
You arrived very quickly.
I was already en route when he called. When Croft and Kuransky didn't return on time, I had a feeling I would be needed.
Kuransky said you were a precog.
Yes. Well, this is excellent coffee. Precognition is the least reliable of the gifts, of course, but this was an exceptionally strong feeling. It didn't carry much in the way of information with it, unfortunately, but Croft's call from Clanholm remedied that. So now you see why I need to place the unit in your hands for the time being.
Actually, no, I don't. I lack the experience, the training. I'm a good detective. I'm not qualified to run a top-secret FBI unit I hadn't even heard about until a few days ago.